Welcome to the Inside Slant Podcast, brought to you by JayhawkSlant.com.
Jay, that makes 14 straight Big 12 conference titles for Bill Self. Just how big is this?
Well, for starters, it has never been done in the history of college basketball.
Bringing you all of the KU Jayhawk scoop, straight from the players, coaches, and recruits.
JK, I understand you've got some breaking news for us?
I do. I've just learned that Les Miles and his staff have landed another big recruit.
For all of the latest news, analysis, and discussion, go online to JayhawkSlant.com. Now, here's the staff from Jayhawk Slant.
Hey, everybody, this is Randy Withers, and welcome into another edition of the Inside Slant Podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. We hope everybody out there had a great Thanksgiving, had a chance to spend some time with your family and friends, and reflect on everything that you're thankful for. With the holiday week, we are a day late, obviously, with the podcast. Technology, however, is a great thing, as I'm running the podcast away from the studio. I'm going to bring in our man on the basketball beat, our hoops editor, Shea Wildebor. Shea, happy Thanksgiving, a day late. How are you?
Man, I'm doing well. I had a great time yesterday, family, and was at mom and dad's house and, you know, put up some more Christmas lights and broke some bread. And, you know, it was great, man. I love spending time with family. I'm a big holiday guy, so it was good to see everybody and just spend the day watching football and relaxing.
Absolutely. I'm right there with you. We got John Kirby, our man from the football beat, on the line as well. Kirby, same to you. Happy Thanksgiving. How was your Thursday?
Hey, happy Thanksgiving to you guys. It was good. My wife's a neonatal nurse practitioner, so she worked at the hospital. It was her holiday on, so I had the two boys. We went over to my mom's, had family there, ate a bunch, came back home. My boys ate more. They kept eating till about 11 p.m. So
that's awesome teenage boys,
man. I gotta keep selling subscriptions to Jayhawk Slant to feed the boys.
The old curb dog didn't cook.
No cooking this year.
See, and that's a perfect transition right there. You mentioned Kirby's got kids to feed, teenage boys. Now is the time to purchase a gift subscription to JayhawkSlant.com to share with your friends, anybody that you know that in Jayhawk Nation that, you know, maybe you've got them started listening to the Inside Slant podcast. Maybe you tell them about the things that you see on the message board. Now's the time to bring them into the fold. You can get a full year for $99. It's all access to the best content available anywhere on the internet about Kansas Jayhawks football, basketball, from some of the best out there covering this athletic department. And you get to hear from me now and then, too. So that's, you know, not really a plus or a negative for that matter. But it's a great time to pick up one of those subscriptions. You know, one thing I do want to mention, just talking about the holidays. You know, I talk about it sometimes on the boards. I work at Samuel Rogers Health Center, which is a nonprofit community health center in Kansas City's urban core. And it's been here for 51 years, and I feel very privileged to do what I do working in community health. We are gearing up for our 26th annual Toys for Tots campaign, and I've got 600 kids signed up needing basically support this holiday season. It's real easy. If you'd like to help out, I would greatly appreciate it. Go to my Twitter feed. There will be a link today that you can click on that takes you directly to an Amazon shopping list that allows you to pick whatever you want. Pay for it right there. They send it directly to us. It allows us to put toys, gifts, warm winter clothing, and even food in the hands of Kansas City's families that really, really need it. So if you've got a minute in the midst of all your Black Friday shopping, help us out. I'd greatly appreciate it.
Hey, that sounds good, Randy. I'll tell you what, I think the Jayhawk Slant account will jump on there and help you out on that.
I hope so. I appreciate it, man. You know, the cool thing about it for me is seeing those kids. We have a big event on December 18th where all those kids will come to the health center with their families, and it is 2 hours, and it is utter insanity, but it is the most fun that I have ever had in my professional life. And that day means more to me than anything. And so I'm busy out. I'm even over Thanksgiving while everybody else is off. I'm trying to meet with people to get secure cash donations because, you know, for that many kids, we need about $15,000. And so we're sitting at about seven right now. So I've got to raise $8,000 basically between now and December 10th for us to have time to go out and buy everything we need. So also, if anybody's interested in making a really big fat cash donation, you know, Jeff Long, if you're listening, give me a call or send me a message. We'd be happy to have any help that anybody is willing to throw out there. Now that I've made my pitch, let's get into this thing. Shay, we had an unbelievable basketball game.
Unbelievable, baby.
Man, what a finish to the Maui Invitational. The Jayhawks take the Maui Jim Maui Invitational with the big win over Dayton. But let's start earlier in it, since we haven't had a chance to talk since the event began. Let's go back to the wins over Chaminade and BYU. Jayhawks really got through those games really without any real opposition, right?
They did, yeah. And that's kind of what I expected. You know, Chaminade, obviously, Division II school. I think they're known for their biggest win back when, God, I don't even know how long ago it was, versus Ralph Sampson in Virginia. You know, then you go on to BYU, who I figured would be tough. No, they had some guys that could hit some shots and some older guys. I mean, some guys that had been on some missions, you know, 23, 24 years old men, you know, with some experience. So, you know, they gave Kansas a run for a little bit, and Kansas was able to distance themselves. And then, man, the finals of the Maui Jim Maui Invitational was unbelievable. I mean, just an unbelievable performance by the Jays.
Dayton was a different story. I mean, that they were for real and a very tough team that played very, very well. Jayhawks had to take it to overtime to put them away and claim the tournament championship. Give me your thoughts on the game against the Flyers and what the Jayhawks showed in what was whether you're a Kansas fan or not, that was just a tremendously entertaining basketball game.
Well, the first thing I learned about this team was, I mean, this is a tough team, man. I mean, listen, this is a game that previously Kansas loses, whether it's VCU or, you know, another tournament, early tournament loss. You know, Dayton came out hitting, man. And I know that Kansas early on was able to contain Obi Toppin. But, you know, other guys hit shots and hit big-time shots. I think for that game, I'll have to go back and look at the box score, but I want to say that Dayton hit, let me see here, 16 of 33 threes. 16 of 33 threes, while Kansas was just 4 of 11 from behind the arc. So here's the deal. So let's play this out. We got two teams throwing haymakers at one another through the first and second half of the ball game. I think with a little less than 8 minutes to go, Kansas found themselves down by 8 points. And at that point, I'm thinking, yep, this is – because even earlier in the day, Jay Billis, I believe, had said that if Kansas wins this game, he would consider it a mild upset. That's how well he thought about – and Dayton came in playing so well. I mean, they were the team of the tournament. They had the sexy player of the tournament, the guy Obi Toppin, who hits the three, turns around before the shot even tickles the twine and kind of looks at the Jayhawk bench and taunts them. So KU's down by 8 with like 7.5 minutes to go. And then all of a sudden, the game instantly switches towards KU's favor. I mean, and you had some big-time plays. You had Ojai Agbaji hit a three. You know, you had Devon Dotson, Marcus Garrett. You know, KU's up three late in the game. Dayton hits a three to tie the game with no time, or what was it, 1.2 seconds left on the clock. And then Kansas just completely controlled overtime. You know, Azubuike was so big. Devon Dotson was so big. And you know, Marcus Garrett hit some shots late. So it was, I mean, listen, it was like a heavyweight championship bout. Guys going back and forth, throwing haymakers. But, you know, Kansas down the stretch was just so damn tough. I mean, Udoka Azubuike in overtime, he was unstoppable. They had no answer for him.
He scored the first 9 points for the Jayhawks when they went to overtime. Yeah, I was blown away at his conditioning.
And he was just, you know, once he gets his foot inside that lane, and he was confident, and he hit free throws. I mean, he hit free throws, Randy. When was the last time we can say Udoka Azubuike hit free throws? Not one free throw, but he was phenomenal. Yeah, I mean, it was just – listen, and when I go back, I look at 2008, and there were some cats on that team that when you looked at them, you knew that they could win a title. They had Russell Robinson. They had Mario Chalmers. They had Brandon Rush, Darrell Arthur, Darnell Jackson. And I look at this team now after that win, and I mean, you've got some guys on here that can play. And in a year where there really isn't a dominant team in college basketball, I mean, dude, if Udoka Azubuike plays like that moving forward, there's nobody that's going to stop him. And if Devon Dotson plays that way moving forward, I mean, he was unbelievable getting to the paint. Can you imagine what the game would have been like had KU hit some shots?
Well, and think about this. Dotson played all 45 minutes
every second. Didn't come off the court. And people want to talk about how, you know, Obi Toppin got started late. Well, you know, Oshai Agbaji didn't play well. I mean, you know, what did he have? 6 points? 3 points? I mean, Isaiah Moss took one shot that whole game. I mean, David McCormick had 3 points, and going into that game, he'd probably been one of KU's best big men. I mean, so it's not like KU. I mean, it took a career outing from two of their best players to win that game. I mean, so it's like they just fought tooth and nail. They refused to quit. Down by 7.5 minutes to go, everything in Dayton's favor, the crowd going wild, and KU looks at each other, they man up, and they were just, I mean, the last, including overtime, the last 12, 14 minutes of that game was unbelievable. I mean, you know, Dayton hits the haymaker at the buzzer. You're going into overtime thinking, man, KU's going to let this one slip. Overtime, they get the ball to Azubuike. Boom. I don't think they trailed in overtime. I think it was tied once or twice. But other than that, I mean, KU just – and Marcus Garrett getting to the basket and making acrobatic shots and, you know, taking care of the basketball. I mean, this is a team that 5 games ago had 28 turnovers against Duke, and I believe they had 11 yesterday or in the title game. So, I mean, taking care of the basketball. I mean, those things like that, coming up with, you know, 5 steals and blocking shots and, you know, hitting 20 to 28 free throws and just doing the things that it takes to be a championship caliber type team. And I'll never forget, Randy, this when Devon Dotson decided to come back, his dad called me and said, hey, he's coming back. And I was like, well, what was it really? I mean, he could have gone. And he said, if you look at all the point guards before that have come through this program, they've all won some type of championship. And Devon last year, in starting as the point guard, did not lead Kansas to any type of Big 12, post, regular, whatever. He said Devon wants to come back and lead Kansas to championships. And so far in year two, you know, he's done that. I mean, they've got one here. You know, you need to finish out the non-conference play strong, get into conference play and kind of play each season. But I think if they can build on that win, you know, they're going to be a tough out wherever they go. I mean, down 8. To a team that just, it was kind of the sexy pick of the tournament once they started rolling. And, you know, everybody wanted to talk Obi Toppin. And, you know, it was just a huge performance by this team. And, you know, Bill always says that you never really grow as a team until you get out on a trip like this. And they certainly grew together, man. I mean, that huddle was tight. And it was just a really good performance for a team that kind of needed something like this to happen.
Now, you and I talked off the air, and you said there really isn't much going on right now with recruiting. So let's look ahead, because after, you know, a quick break, you have the number 21 team in the country in Colorado coming to town. Former Big 12 and Big 8 member, you know, the Buffaloes, and basically kind of an old friend, really, for the Jayhawks. What are your early thoughts, and what things do you like from what you've seen so far? And what are some things that you still feel like this squad needs to work on at this point in the season?
I want to see them continue to just keep. Here's the thing that this team needs to do. This team needs to play a 40-minute game. You know, that's something that I'd love to see. Obviously, you're not going to get Devon Dotson scoring 31 and Udoka Azubuike scoring 29 every night, but those guys need to be the consistent leaders. I mean, those are the guys that are going to Bill's going to give those guys the key to this car, this machine, and let them do what they want. And, you know, they just got to be consistent. You know, I want to see Isaiah Moss get more involved. I mean, this is a guy that was hailed as a difference maker from beyond the arc. Against Iowa, he played 35 minutes – or, I'm sorry, against Dayton, he played 35 minutes and was 0-for-1, attempted one shot. I mean, he needs more looks. He's a guy that can absolutely change the landscape of a game from behind the arc. You know, where is Silvio De Souza gone, man? I mean, talk about a kid that endured everything. You know, he arrived early from IMG Academy. I think sometimes people forget that. you know, and had to sit out some games, made his debut, I believe, against K-State, and really didn't, early on that season, really didn't have much of an impact. Kind of took off during the Big 12 tournament when Udoka Azubuike was out, had a wonderful performance against Duke to get Kansas to the Final Four. Last year he sits out all year. So, you know, he's this is a guy that's still kind of learning. He played 53 seconds against Dayton in the Maui Championship class, in the Maui Championship final. 53 seconds. They're going to need him. They're going to need his energy. They're going to need his, you know, the way he battles, the way he rebounds, the way he plays. You know, just that kind of enthusiasm, that fire, that that edge he plays with. You know, they're going to need that. You know, I'm interested to see. I've been really impressed with Tristan Inaruna. You know, he played 18 minutes the other day, hit a big three. Defensively, he's really a lot better than I thought he was going to be. He's been a surprise to me. I mean, a guy that really I wasn't sure what to expect, but he's come in and already, you know, seven games in, he's really surprised me. You know, Ochai Agbaji, not saying that he's disappeared. You know, he's a guy also yesterday that, or 2 days ago that played 45 minutes, you know, 6 points, 2 of 9 from the field, 1 of 5 from the arc. I mean, you know, this is a guy that, you know, many believe after this year could test the NBA waters and potentially leave, and he hasn't gotten off to the start that he wanted. So, I want to see those guys start to come around. You know, I'm interested to see also, you know, what Coach Self decides to do with the lineup. Is he going to stick with the two bigs go with the four guard, one out? You know, I love the four guard lineup. You know, there's with David on the floor and Udoka on the floor, there's just not a lot of room to operate for Doki. I mean, he needs space. And when the lane's congested like that, there's not a lot of room for him to move and maneuver and operate. And I just love the idea of adding another 3-point shooter on the court, a guy that can get to the cup. And if you notice the last, I don't know if it's 3 games or 4 games that, you know, Coach Self has started with the 4-guard lineup, but at halftime, he's made the move to the first half he started the two bigs, and then after that he's gone small with Isaiah Moss starting. So, you know, I'm interested to see kind of what he settles on. You know, for me, I just love the 4-guard lineup. That's just me. So, I'm interested just to kind of see how these guys continue to improve. You know, David McCormick is also a guy that, you know, has a chance to be really, really, really good if he can just slow down a little bit. You know, Marcus Garrett, I can't say enough about him. 18 huge points against Dayton. Just so efficient getting to the basket. You know, 5 of 6 from the free throw line, 7 rebounds. So, yeah, I think this team has a lot going for it. I think right now, I mean, you look at Kansas, you look at Louisville. I mean, the way those two teams are playing, you could make a case for those two teams being the top two teams. But, again, I don't think there's a dominant team right now in college basketball. So, I think, you know, the number one team is going to be a revolving door. But for right now, man, Kansas coming off that Dayton win, you know, you can't rest on that. I mean, you got to get ready for Colorado. They're going to be ready to play. You know, you still got Villanova coming up. You've got some big games. So you just, you know, you got to keep improving on the last game, keep building on that momentum, and, you know, get home to the field house and take care of business and, you know, just keep rolling along and keep getting better.
That's our man, Shea Wildebor, our Hoops Insider. Shea, I appreciate all the insight and everything. Have a good rest of the Thanksgiving holiday. We will talk with you again soon.
Hey, Randy, thanks a lot, man. Let's get those toys for those kids, and have a great day.
You too. Thanks, man. I appreciate the support. I'm going to bring in our man on the football beat, John Kirby, now. Kirby, last week, the football program, Les Miles' squad, they took Iowa State to the final minutes and gave the Cyclones everything they had. Gosh, I don't even know what you can say about that game.
Well, I think it's one of those things, Randy. You look back on those games 2-3 years down the road and you go, that's one of those games where you felt the program was changing. Because, listen, this is a game nobody thought was going to be really close. Okay? I mean, you're talking 24-point line in Vegas. When you looked at the score prediction thread on our message board, there was very few people who thought it would be close. And Kansas True. Just kind of found a way to fight. You know, they kind of found a way to hang in there. And I'll tell you something that was important. And I talked about this on Sports Radio 810 this morning when I was on the Border Patrol. Kansas scored first, okay? And now they didn't get touchdowns. They got field goals. But that game was 14-9. It started off 3-0. But Kansas was always within striking distance, okay? They were always within a score, it felt like. And you never felt Iowa State pulling away. So I think that's important. We've been sitting here on our podcast, Les Miles and the players. They've been asked about this all season long, about guys, you keep falling behind. You keep digging a hole. How do you do this? How do you get away from it? How do you get out of it? And, you know, you could tell Les Miles, you could tell the players are definitely sick and tired of getting asked that question. Well, against Iowa State, they find a way to start out early. Okay, I know they would have liked to had 7 and not 3, but the fact of the matter is, I think it built a little bit of momentum, a little bit of confidence. So that was something nice to see. I thought the defense at stretches played well. They got off the field. They forced 4 punts. You know, Liam Jones still kicked 3 field goals. I know he missed one. But, you know, the team played well, and those kids didn't quit. And, again, we're probably going to do this every podcast, Randy. We're going to refer back to what we've seen as proof as fans and people who follow the program. But when you look back over time and look back at Mangino and Mason's first years, I want to say they want to combine 3 games together. But there were building blocks in place. And I think when we look at this team here, you're going to look back over some of these games where they found a way to beat Texas. They went to the last series against Iowa State. They went to the last series against West Virginia. They went to the last series against Texas. You know, they didn't just fold against Oklahoma State. And we always talk about back when Mangino was the coach, although Kansas would lose games, the opponents left the field saying, we were in a battle. We were in a dogfight there. Well, there's quite a few teams who leave the field now and they say, man, that Kansas team kept coming at us, or they wouldn't die, or that thing was closer than we thought. So I think this is one of those games where I know you want to win, and I know you're just thinking, gosh, if somebody could have just made one more play, the game could have been different. But this is all kind of part of that building process. So I take that Iowa State game as a positive. I know people are going to say, nah, that's a loser's mentality, and you're playing for victories. Absolutely, you're playing for victories. But also, when you're turning a program around and you're trying to build your own culture, it's got to start somewhere.
Baylor's up next this Saturday, and the matchup with the Bears will close out Les Miles' first season in Lawrence. Before we get into the game, let's bring in Kevin Longquist, who covers the Baylor football program for the Rivals Network, and get an insider's view of where the Bears are coming into this week.
Our guest this week is Kevin Longquist from Sikkim Sports, who covers the Baylor football program for the Rivals.com network. Kevin, how you doing?
Good to be with you, John.
Hey, thanks for coming on. You know, hey, first we got to get this out of the way. You got to shoot me straight. Did you see this type of season coming for Baylor?
No. I predicted 8-4. And I thought that they would be a dark horse for the Big 12 championship. And I thought it was really going to depend on how they were going to navigate through November. And I mean, I thought that they had a chance to be 7-1 going into the month, but then they had at TCU, which has never been a good thing for them recently. And then they had back to back with Oklahoma and Texas. And so those were like the 3 games that I'm thinking, well, maybe not. And so that's why I was where I was at. And, of course, now we're talking about a bizarre second half against Oklahoma, and they're looking at 11-0 going into the finale against Kansas. But nonetheless, they're still 10-1, and they're going into the finale at Kansas.
I want to talk about the Baylor offense for starters here. You know, what have you seen from them? What makes them successful, and who are the players to watch on that side?
Well, it starts with Charlie Brewer, their junior quarterback. And Charlie, first thing you got to know about Charlie is that he's very stoic. Doesn't look at anything great or anything negative one way or the other. It's pretty much even keel throughout. And the one thing about Charlie is that he's just – I call him one of the alphas in the locker room just because the way he handles himself, and I think the way the guys gravitate to him. Doesn't have the biggest arm, so the deep ball is not going to be a big part of his thing, but he just knows how to lead a football team. Of course, he did that because he learned through it with his brothers and, of course, his dad, who was a quarterback at the University of Texas. The running game has been a little bit up and down this year. I actually am using the word erratic. I mean, Jamichael Hasty and John Lovett have been okay, but the running game is a little bit more effective when Charlie's moving around and he's actually calling his own number. wide receiver crew has been pretty much led by who should have been a Biletnikoff semifinalist but isn't, and Denzel Mims, who's on pace to have his second 1,000-yard receiving season. And then you got Tyquan Thornton, number two wide receiver. He's a sophomore, very athletic. Both of them have made a lot of tremendous catches during the course of the year. That's pretty much where it is for those guys. They've got some complimentary players like Treston Ebner and Josh Fleeks, who will get some touches here and there. But for the most part, it's been about those four or five names that I've mentioned.
Switching over to the other side of the ball, you know, Baylor's been one of the best defensive teams in the Big 12. Just tell me how has that led to the production that you've seen, and who are the key players on that side?
Well, obviously they're leading the conference in sacks, and that starts with them flipping from a four-man look to a three-man look this year. And they're led by James Lynch, who I think is probably going to have the inside track to the Big 12 Player of the Year honors. He just set the Baylor career sacks mark against Texas this past weekend. He's got 19. They've gotten really solid production from their nose tackle, Bravion Roy. Linebacker core is really, really solid between James Lynch on the strong side, Jordan Williams on the weak side, and then Terrell Bernard in the middle. Now, Bernard actually replaced Clay Johnson, who went down with a season-ending knee injury against Texas Tech, but Terrell's actually picked it up, and they haven't missed a beat with him. That core is probably one of the best linebacker groups I've seen come through Baylor in many, many years. Secondary's been pretty solid as well. Jamison Houston's had a very strong year at corner. And then Graylin Arnold has been very, very good at one of the safety spots. He has four of his last five interceptions in the last three games. And then you have Chris Miller, one of the hardest hitters in the Big 12. He maybe too hard, because he actually picked up three targeting penalties and was suspended for the TCU game. He's back now, so he's obviously kind of learned how to correct where he's been making the mistakes. But it's really all three tiers, John, that have been collectively moving in the right direction for them.
Well, you got one game left here. Kansas is on the road, and then they've got to get ready for the Big 12 championship. So, you know, what's your take on this game? How do you see the matchup, and what's your prediction?
Well, I think Baylor's going to win it, and I think it's going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 to 3 scores. I mean, this is nothing against Kansas, but they're a program under Les Miles who can be dangerous. They can score a lot of points, as we saw last week at Iowa State, and as we saw with what they did in Austin. So I know that Baylor understands that what they've got some work to do here against Kansas, and they've got to be careful. And they understand they've got to be really careful if they don't let Puka get loose. And regardless of if it's going to be Carter Stanley or somebody else that's taking snaps for them, they've got to do the same thing on the defensive front that they've been doing all season long. They also understand too that they're in the playoff hunt at sitting at number 9 in the rankings, and so. The one thing that they've been really good at this year, John, is that they've been very process oriented, to where they don't look ahead to anything. They don't get too swept up in the moment, that they are very understanding of, we've got to stay focused on this play. Don't get too hyped up if it's a great play, or too beaten down if it's a bad play. And since I've watched them throughout the year, that's really much how they've maintained. Yeah, there's the celebration after a big play, and there's maybe some frustration a little bit, but they're able to kind of put that behind them immediately and move on. And I think that's what they'll be able to do at Kansas. But they also understand, too, that Kansas can hit them, and they can't overlook them, too.
Kevin, great insight, man. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
Likewise, John. We'll look forward to getting together with you during basketball season. Those should be some good games this year, too.
That was a look from the Baylor side. Now let's start digging into this game ourselves. Kirby, how do you see this matchup? What are your keys to the game against the Bears, and how do you see this one playing out for the Jayhawks?
Well, Randy, the first thing that my concern is just Baylor up front defensively. I mean, they've got the James Lynch kid, who's a monster. I mean, he's a beast. You know, usually he lines up. Oh, he's on the side of the right guard, the right tackle. So he's going to be a handful for those guys. You know, they're back in that three-man front. Then they've got the Bravion Roy kid at defensive tackle, who's another beast. So, you know, Maine, Tovai, they're going to have their hands full at center. And the key here is, and I really believe this, is finding a way to slow that Baylor front down because they play that three-man front, so it allows them to take eight guys and roam about the field. And if Puka Williams can get going, if you look at any game that Kansas has been good in this year where they've moved the football, Puka Williams has always had good games. I don't think Kansas can have a good game offensively and not have Puka have a good game. I think he's the key because I think what happens is once he gets his lanes and once he starts making a few people miss and rolling off big runs, defensive coordinators shift what they wanted to do and they start focusing more on the run game to figure out how to stop it, which starts giving Stanley some better opportunities in man coverage or one-man high safety looks. So getting Puka going is a big one, but controlling the physicality of Baylor up front. Listen, go back and look. I mean, when you go back and look at Baylor's schedule, I know they're a good football team. They really are. If they weren't, they wouldn't be 10-1 and ranked 11th in the country. But you go back and look at West Virginia. They had to block a field goal, and they won 17-14 against Texas Tech. They won in double overtime where the score was 20-20 going into overtime. They had TCU. They were down 9-6 with one play left in the game, and a kid comes on and kicks a 50-yard field goal to send it into overtime, tied 9-9. Okay? They beat Rice on the road 21-13. So when you look at Baylor, they haven't been dominant. Okay, now they've put together some good games. You know, they played really well against Texas. They played really well against Kansas State. But they've also shown some abilities to have close games and not get a lead built up and extend it out. So, you know, the Kansas defense is going to have to get some stops. So far, Baylor's offense, I want to say when you go look at their scoring offense and their total offense, they're like 6th and 7th in the Big 12. So Kansas defense, if they can get some stops and get off the field like they did in spurts against Iowa State, that would be big. And you know, it's senior day, so you know, you hope those Kansas kids are giving their best effort. You hope the kids who aren't seniors are playing their best effort. When I talked to Andrew Parchment this week, he said something that, hey, we want to send the seniors out on a good note. So maybe you get the team that comes in, they rally around. I don't know how the crowd's going to be. It's Thanksgiving weekend. I think you're going to see some attendances down all over the country on Thanksgiving because of the holidays. But something else that could be a factor in this one, too. Weather forecast. I just saw it before we started the podcast. They're calling for 15 to 25 mile an hour winds with gusts up to 30 to 35 miles an hour. So that could affect the passing game and what teams do. But, you know, I really, Randy, deep down, I wouldn't bet on this game in a million years. I mean, these are two teams that can be really good or really bad. Kansas, if they're really good, they're scary because they can move the football and they can put up points. They have enough weapons. So Baylor has shown the ability to be really good, and they've also shown the ability to be very average. So it's hard to predict which teams are going to show up, but I'm gonna go on the side that we see a good effort from Kansas. I don't think it'll be enough to beat Baylor. I'm going to go Baylor 24, Kansas 17. All right, give me yours.
You know, I love what we've seen in a number of different games this year. Maybe the best effort was last week against Iowa State, just given how much of an underdog the Jayhawks were entering the matchup with the Cyclones. I think, you know, you talked about the issues that Baylor presents up front, and I think that's where the real separation is for the Jayhawks compared to the Big 12 in regards to, you know, we've talked about the roster, we've talked about depth, but there's just a difference in talent right there between the Jayhawks specifically and Baylor in this matchup. There's a reason that Baylor has played as well as they have in the conference this year, and a lot of it has to do with their strength up front, both on offense and defense. I don't think the Jayhawks have the guys that they need along the front lines on either side to be able to hang with them. I think, I think this one, 42-17, Baylor.
Wow, you're going with the hammer down. You're talking about Baylor coming in here and lighting it up.
Well, and I think there's a lot that goes into that, really, because you have a Baylor squad that is. You know, has put themselves in position to play in the Big 12 championship game. They're trying to find, they're trying to make sure that they leave no doubt with that. But at the same time, even though they are further down the list in regards to the football play, the college football playoff, style points matter. And if you can hang a big number on a tough Kansas team coached by Les Miles that has put up a big fight against some good conference opponents, you know, maybe that helps them a little bit, or that's going to be their belief as to why, okay, we have to go out guns blazing and put everything we've got into this matchup. They have not fared well against Baylor in the last, you know, for as long as I can remember.
And no, you're right.
I think this is just more of the same. They've got to, you know, it goes down to recruiting. I know we've talked a lot about that. They've got to add not just talent, but just depth. They need numbers along the front line. And until they do that, games like this are going to be tough.
You make a great point, Randy. I mean, the one thing that Kansas doesn't have on their side is history in this. Because if you look at the last two times Kansas has played Baylor, and I just go back to the Kansas fan base, to our subscribers, to reading the message board, everyone thought there was a puncher's chance the last two times they played Baylor. And I remember 2 years ago at home, I mean, Baylor came in here and just put a whipping on Kansas. And everybody thought that game could be close. And everybody thought last year's game might be close. And Kansas just never got up off the mat. I mean, they never even came out to start. So, you know, you do make a good point in that regard, that Kansas has struggled the last two times they've played them in what people thought were going to be fairly close football games.
We mentioned recruiting. And, you know, in our last edition of the Inside Slant podcast, you broke down several visitors you were expected to be coming in during the month of December. Do you have any updates on any new names or specific dates for people that KU fans should be paying attention to?
Yeah, Randy, there's really not anybody new at this point for this class. Okay, now that could still change because we're getting ready to get into the wild time where the coaches are going to get on the road Sunday and be out. What I've kind of focused on for this podcast is the next visit weekend, which is December 6th. So the guys that I have penciled in that I've been able to confirm with him that I believe are coming on the 6th for sure are Josh Remetich, an offensive lineman from Louisiana. He's one of the fan favorites on the message board. Cade Collier, a big tight end, Alabama. Armaj Adams, who is teammates of Lawrence Arnold, who from DeSoto, Texas, who is already committed to the Jayhawks. And we talked about this. I have given Armaj Adams a forecast in my recruiting predictions that he will be a Jayhawk. I hope I'm right on that. I'm still not 100% certain, but I felt good enough to forecast it. And then we got a couple corners to watch. Devon Martin, cornerback from Florida. I like him a lot. 6'2", kid smooth. He can turn. He can run. He's starting to get some more recruiting interest. Chevis Jackson's been on him. I just talked to him not too long ago. So he told me December 6th, he's looking forward to his visit. And another corner, Karan Prunty, who's a defensive back from Portsmouth, Virginia. I know he just got offered here recently by Pitt and Virginia Tech. Kansas has been on him. He is planning to be in on the 6th. So that's a decent little list of guys there. I'm still waiting to hear on Ashad Clayton what he's going to do. There's a possibility that Daniel Hyshaw and Stephen McBride, who are committed players, could be in that weekend. And also, just a little note, tomorrow for the Baylor game, keep an eye out. There's a quarterback, 2020-2021 kid coming in, Caden McMullen from Christian Academy in the St. Louis area. I know Brent Dierman likes him a lot. There's been some communication there. Kansas, Michigan State, Iowa are on him early. And then I think you'll see a few of the normal suspects, you know, coming in for the Baylor game. Trevor Cardell, Jalen Richardson, Devin Neal, the 2021 running back from Lawrence High School, who's, you know, already ranked among the top players in the state. So that's kind of where we're at in recruiting. And here in this next week, we're going to know a lot more.
That will do it for this edition of the Inside Slant podcast. Again, wishing everybody out there in Jayhawk Nation a happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy the rest of the weekend with your friends and family. We heard from Shea Wildebor today, our man on the basketball beat, about the Jayhawks' triumph in the Maui Jim Maui Invitational. Talked to Kirby about the matchup with Baylor on Saturday, and we talked a little bit about the need that we have at the health center. for Toys for Tots. Remember me, if you can, click on my Twitter feed today at Randy Withers KC, and there will be a link where you can do some Black Friday shopping from the comfort of your own home and help kids in need here in Kansas City. For the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com, I'm your host, Randy Withers. We will talk with you again soon.
This has been a podcast from JayhawkSlant.com.